Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. Still a little disappointed about the basketball last night.
Yes, well, aren't we
I'm
all?
I'm fine.
Yeah. Yes. Basketball is a disappointing situation for Kentucky fans today. But we have plenty of politics stuff to talk about this week. We are going to start by talking about what is going on with the 2019 election, which still has a couple of threads that are left hanging. We're going to explain all those to you. And then we have lots of U.S. Senate news. Jasmine's going to talk to us a little bit of drama with Matt Jones. I'm going to talk to us about Charles Booker, who started an exploratory campaign, and Kentucky had its first application for a charter school. And we're going to talk about that as well, in addition to Quick Hit. So Jasmine, without any further ado, tell us what we need to know about this week in the 2019 election.
Okay, so some of this is a little bit of a recap from last week, but a lot has happened since then. So the re-canvass of the gubernatorial election will take place tomorrow at 9 a.m., and it's widely expected that we're going to confirm that Andy Beshear won the election. As we've said before, any vote changes from a re-canvass will likely be minimal, right?
Right.
So we talked quite a bit last week about the options that Governor Bevin has if the re-canvass doesn't go his way. However, it appears that he's kind of losing the support of House Republicans, which he'd really need if he's going to win a contested election.
Right.
So the first GOP member to speak out, we talked about his statement last week, was Jason Nemes. And then shortly after that, others followed suit. So Northern Kentucky Representative Adam Koenig said, "For all the Republicans who scream and yell that we shouldn't overturn an election with impeachment and removal of the president, they should feel exactly the same way about overturning an election for the governor's race. There's nothing wrong with checking the math. Unless there's a mountain of clear, unambiguous evidence, then he should let it go."
Right.
Then GOP rep from Danville, Dan Elliott, said that absent any proof of irregularities, he should concede after the re-canvass and congratulate Andy Beshear, and said that he would not participate or support any effort to invalidate the election results. And then Travis Brenda from Rockcastle, he retweeted Representative Elliott's statement and said that he agreed.
Right.
Then we had an Eastern Kentucky Representative, John Blanton. He said, "The last thing anyone wants to do is overturn a constitutional election. We want the will of the people to be done."
Uh-huh.
So a lot of statements from House Republicans, but, you know, the Kentucky Senate would also have to play an important part in an election challenge. And we talked about last week, Senate President Stivers gave an initial statement on election night, and he's the one that kind of first brought up the contested election.
Right.
And you said you thought it was just that he got caught kind of off the cuff.
Right.
Wasn't a planned statement or anything. And I was like, I don't know. But I think you were probably right, Robert.
For once.
Because he kind of clarified his statement. So he said, "It's the governor's prerogative to request re-canvassing or file an application to contest the election, both of which will have a very high bar to succeed. If such a situation arises when the Senate's involvement is required as prescribed by the Constitution, our chamber will fulfill its requirements with the utmost objectivity and impartiality." So that's better than what he said the night of.
Right, absolutely.
And then, you know, Kentucky Republicans on the federal level may have also got in on the action. So Philip Bailey, he's of the Courier Journal. He reported that Mitch McConnell had basically given the okay to let Bevin go quietly into the night. Team Mitch, which is their, you know, Twitter account for the campaign, Team
right.
Mitch says, "Not true." Bailey said, "I stand by my reporting."
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of where we were left with that. But regardless of whether or not his reporting is correct, Mitch McConnell himself did say that all indications are, barring some dramatic reversal on the re-canvass, we'll have a different governor in 3 weeks. So it kind of seems like the Republicans are letting him go.
Right. It does seem like a large number of people have been willing to speak out on this on the Republican side. But none of that really seems to be deterring Matt Bevin.
Oh, no. And that's what's worried me the whole time.
Right. Yeah, right? Absolutely. So the Courier Journal published a quote from Bevin over the weekend where he spoke to the right-wing group Young Americans Foundation. I think that actually used to be called Young Americans for Freedom, and I think they changed their name. So if you're familiar with YAF. Anyways, this group, he spoke to them, and he said that, quote, "He would be darned if he wanted to lose a dirty election," unquote.
A dirty election, that's like a big accusation.
It is. And one that you probably should be able to back up. But as we'll get into, there's been a lot of weird stuff that's happened since then, none of which involves any proof. So Matt Bevin also tweeted this morning, which today is November the 13th. It's Wednesday. Matt Bevin tweeted that he would be attending a press conference by a group calling itself Citizens for Election Integrity. Apparently, this group has an @gmail.com email address. It seems like it was pretty slapped together at the last minute. It happened like this week, maybe even like today. And in the press release that Matt Bevin had, they cited several items without providing any proof as to like what might be weird about this election, including an anecdote about a family who says their son's signature was forged in a voter book. They also had what they called, quote, video evidence of electronic both manipulation and the governor's race, which is grammatically incorrect. I saw this on Twitter. One person I follow said it looks like that there were editing irregularities in addition to election irregularities.
Good one.
Yes, very good. So the executive director of the group, her name is Kristen Stoubes, I think, is S-T-E-U-B-S, and she is a Bevin appointee to the Horse Park Commission, so a big Bevin supporter.
Well, and the other woman as well was part of a judicial nominating commission for the Court of Appeals and the Kentucky Supreme Court.
Right.
So, you know, both were part of the Bevin administration.
Yes, both have been put into places of power by Governor Bevin. So this group, the Citizens for Election Integrity, they held a press conference today. This is, again, November the 13th. It is Wednesday. It was wild. They came forward with this accusation about this person who, you know, said that their name was forged. I think they had a video from this person who I believe attends the University of Tampa. Some intrepid researchers think that this person might have been a Christian Academy of Louisville, former student alumni from there who's at University of Tampa. And this person says someone forged his signature on Election Day. It's hard to understand how he would know that since he wasn't, you know, there. He was in Tampa. But Joe Sokka actually had some reporting on this late in the day. It's not even in our notes. But he said that the Jefferson County Board of Election said that there were two people with this exact name. And one person with that name looked up what precinct he was supposed to go to, went to the wrong one, signed his name on that person's name line, and then went and voted in the wrong precinct. So that is the Jefferson County Board of Elections explanation to this. Just a pretty simple mistake, not really voter fraud on any level, not any like organized problem. Anyways, the group also cited Anderson County's differences between the official vote totals given to the State Board of Elections and the unofficial totals on the State Board of Elections website. Joe Sokka also debunked that claim earlier today. He asked the county clerk in Anderson County. That person says that there were 405 absentee walk-in and mail-in ballots that did not properly upload to the Secretary of State, which is where we get the data that is causing these people to be confused about the counts. Logan County also encountered the same problem. Sanka's reporting had both of these things out there. But between those two counties, you know, these walk-in absentee ballots did net Bevin about 100 net votes. So we're down to about 5,000 instead of about 5,100.
And the Herald Leader reported that Menifee County was another county where they hadn't reported absentee votes that the group had brought up.
Right.
And they confirmed with Menifee County that it was just the absentee ballots hadn't been reported.
So this is an issue that it doesn't seem like that there is any, there's not really a large problem. It just is the way that it was reported. And once the tally becomes official with all of the official numbers, we'll have a more solid answer there. The press conference eventually devolved into accusations about CNN that were kind of hard to parse. I didn't really understand what was going on at that point. Some members of the media reported that they claimed that the media were directing the outcome of the election. Others reported that they were saying that the election systems were hacked. There was at one point a poster board, looked like a science fair presentation where they had kind of like used glue sticks to like glue printer paper onto a large board showing that, and CNN, somebody had shown the crawl had shown Bevin with 506 votes, and then all of a sudden 506 votes shifted to Andy Beshear, which to them showed some sort of crazy, you know, conspiracy. But in my mind, what likely happened is they got 506 votes. These guys' names have the first two letters that are exactly the same. They put them in the wrong column, realized the error, and then switched it back. It's just CNN. It's not really, it's not like the
right,
Secretary
like
of State or anything.
That's the important thing to note, is that I don't think the Secretary of State's office takes the CNN totals when they you know, tally the ballot, certify the results. I don't think that's what they're pulling from.
Yeah, so. Almost certainly not. In fact, I'm guaranteeing you that is not what happens. So at some point during this press conference, the two women giving the press conference said that they were just two moms. And they called on the media to do further investigations to the breadcrumbs that they said they had laid out.
Yeah, that was really strange because they said, we're just two moms. We don't want to be doing this. And it's like, well,
then don't.
You didn't have to.
Yeah.
So they said the attorney general should be doing this and that the attorney general has received over 130 complaints that he hasn't addressed. And I don't know, like, how they know the number of complaints there have been. It's all just very strange.
It is. And you know, when they called on the media to do more investigation, I mean, the thing is, the media has done these investigations and they've kind of been like, okay, well, here's what happened in Anderson County. Here's what happened
with
this
guy's name. Right, it literally took like a couple hours for an article in the Courier Journal and the Herald Leader to debunk everything, essentially.
Yeah, Jasmine, do you know who Jacob Wohl is?
Yes, that's exactly what this reminded me of. He has press conferences like at his buddy's house.
He said that Elizabeth Warren was having an affair with some like Marine. It was all these like crazy conspiracy theories.
And Kamala hooked up with a trainer something.
Yeah.
That was the second press conference.
So this is what it kind of felt like. And it was the national right wing press, like InfoWars, were out in force at this thing. I think Joe Girth, reporter from the Courier Journal, and an InfoWars writer got into an argument with each other. I think that sounded kind of funny. So anyways, Jasmine, based on everything you said about the Republicans at the start, who are seem to be, you know, saying, hey, we think that he needed to give some solid evidence or else back off. That's one thing. But Matt Bevin is certainly the wild card in the midst of this process. I do think that it seems like the Republican Party in Kentucky is ready to respect the outcome of this close election. That's really good. I think that's really good.
Yeah.
Even if Matt Bevin does something crazy, it seems like that there's a backstop there that's ready to say, no, Matt Bevin, you can't do that, which is something you want in a good system. You know, we are not Republicans, and we were cheering for Andy Beshear to win, and they were not. And it's nice to say, hey, you know what? You guys won this one, and that's what we're going to respect. And that's good to hear. So good on the Republican Party of Kentucky for doing that. So, Jasmine, tell us what we need to know about Matt Jones.
Okay, Robert. It seems like everything happens on Thursdays.
Right. That's why we record on Wednesday.
The re-canvas is tomorrow, so we're not going to get to talk about it today.
Subscribe to the newsletter.
Last week, it was a quick hit about Matt Jones having an FEC complaint. But then, after we recorded, Matt Jones was taken off the air. So that's what we're going to talk about today and a little bit more that's unfolded since then. So like I said last week, we very quickly discussed the Republican Party of Kentucky's filing an FEC complaint against Matt Jones. The violations, I don't think we talked in specifics about what the violations were, but they're alleging that his radio show with iHeartRadio and his book tour paid for by Simon & Schuster are basically in-kind corporate contributions.
Right. And an in-kind contribution is anything that's like not money. So if you donate like a logo and you're like, I don't want you to pay me for this logo, that's an in-kind contribution. Yeah.
Right. And Matt Jones has said since then that his book tour did not get paid for. So I don't really know like where that allegation comes from. But they're also alleging that he isn't reporting things like travel expenses for his book. And obviously they're arguing that he is a candidate, even though he has formed an exploratory committee. He's not filed to run, but that's what they're arguing.
It sounds like from his comments, though, that he doesn't have any travel expenses to report because he's covering them.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. After we recorded last week, Matt Jones announced that he would no longer be on the radio going forward and that this was a decision by iHeartRadio.
Mm-hmm.
He said that, you know, he doesn't have any ill will against them. You know, they want to protect themselves, and they've been like pretty supportive of him the whole time he's been considering the race.
I mean, he hasn't shown any hesitation to like throw a media company like under the bus if he doesn't feel like they've been supportive,
right?
Because that's kind of what he did at
WLEX. Yeah, exactly. You know, so the next morning, Kentucky Sports Radio went on without Matt Jones and was hosted by some of his regular co-hosts, Drew Franklin and Ryan Lemon, and they decided to start a Free Matt Jones hashtag. which very quickly became the number one trend in the U.S. on Twitter by the end of their just like 2-hour morning radio show.
Wow.
And it was a top 25 trend in the whole world. I listened to the show and there were tons of Republicans calling in and saying like, they always vote Republican, but this is the last draw. I'm not voting for Mitch McConnell after this. He mm-hmm. really messed with the wrong person. So people were legitimately upset. And there was a huge outpouring of support for Matt Jones on Twitter and on the radio show itself. So then later that evening, Matt Jones did a Periscope, which I think he's the only person I know
still doing those.
But I tuned in, and Matt Jones said that he had planned on potentially announcing that he was not running on Thursday. So basically, if Mitch had waited 24 hours, maybe it would have been moved.
if he was being truthful, yes.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people say. I think it's genuine. We've talked about this before.
That he's
an external processor. And I think that's true. And he didn't say he was definitely going to do it. He said that he was probably going to announce on Thursday. And he said that if Bevin had won, he definitely wasn't running. But that if Andy had won, he was still leaning against it, but was going to take a couple more days to think about it. It seems like the outpouring of support has kind of made him think about it a little bit more, which I think that's something you have to consider because even though a lot of people know who he is, name recognition would still be an issue for him, probably.
Sure.
I don't know what's going to happen, but I think a couple questions for Matt Jones are, does he want to permanently give up his radio show? He's now seen a little bit of what life is like without it.
Mm-hmm.
And two, like, can he get his name out there and raise the money that Amy McGrath is raising? And I think maybe Thursday showed him a little bit that he can get his name out there and he does have a lot of support, but that was like one day, you know, I don't know.
Being able to sustain that for an entire campaign season.
Right, exactly. He did a Matt Jones podcast episode that he recorded with Steve Romines, an attorney, yesterday, and he talked a lot about the invasion of privacy too. So I kind of think that's the third thing, that he knows that there are people looking into his friends and he knows things that are going to come out and he doesn't want to put other people through that.
Right.
And that's just something you have to think out. Your whole personal life and everyone around you's personal life may be out there. And he said he's not so much worried about Mitch McConnell because he knows that what Mitch will do is align him with Hillary Clinton and mailers with AOC out there and those kind of things and say that he supports abortion and, you know, all of that kind of stuff that the Republican Party already does.
Right.
He's more worried about attacks from his own party in the primary.
Yeah. Well, I think he probably should be. And I think that, you know, this is something that I've heard is that there's, you know, a lot of opposition research about Matt Jones. But I mean, I'm sure that's something that he knows and something that he's considering in the midst of all of this.
I think we can expect a decision by the end of this week.
Yeah. Well, it'll probably come tomorrow since you mentioned.
Everything happens on Thursday.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But Jasmine, Matt Jones is not the only potential United States Senate candidate that made news this week. Representative Charles Booker, who's been on this show a couple times, he announced on Monday, the 11th, that he was seriously considering running for United States Senate against Mitch McConnell. He formed an exploratory committee and also released a video. Did you get a chance to see it?
The video is really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could listen to him talk forever.
Yeah, he's great. Booker said several months ago that he was interested in this race. So back in July, Booker told Philip Bailey that he was considering a run for this office. And this was after Amy McGrath officially announced.
Like right after mm-hmm. the day one flubs of Amy
right.
McGrath.
Yeah, Booker said his decision didn't have anything to do with those, the McGrath flubs, as you said. But he did say that he, quote, joined a lot of folks across Kentucky with concerns about some of the messaging that was communicated in that rollout, unquote. That a very, very nice way to say that.
Yeah.
That was very disappointing and for somebody who was a progressive and had hoped to have a progressive candidate. So already in this race are Amy McGrath and Mike Breuer and a host of, I think, like 4 or 5 other candidates have actually already filed as well. And Matt Jones, as you mentioned, also started an exploratory committee. And then Rocky Adkins also said during the summer on our show that he was considering a run for the office of the United States Senate. So Booker's introductory video is about 3 minutes long, and it got rave reviews from the liberal folks I follow on Twitter, including you. So Yeah.
I don't think I tweeted about it.
You did. Well, we talked about it, and I follow you. That's all I'm saying. So, yeah, there were a lot of people.
I follow all those liberal folks, too.
Yeah. In it, Charles Booker uses progressive language like Green New Deal, Medicare for All, but he tries to make the case for those in a Kentucky context. I expect much of the punditry around this race to be about electability. You know, can a progressive African-American win in the state of Kentucky? And I think that a lot of people will say that he can't. But I've been thinking about this quite a bit since Charles Booker announced his potential candidacy. And one of the things that I landed on is that the realization that black voters are an increasingly important block of Kentucky primary voters in the Democratic primary. So no candidate on this year's Democratic primary ballot won without winning Louisville's West End. And that was really, really key to Andy Beshear's victory.
Right. He had a huge West End victory in Louisville.
Yeah. And if he hadn't, he probably would have lost that election to Rocky Adkins. So recently we spoke with Reverend L. Clark Williams. And, you know, he said something on the show that really stuck with me. He made the point that black voters vote overwhelmingly for Democrats and that about 15% or so of the Democratic base in Kentucky comes from African Americans. So, you know, saying that like somebody can't win because they're African American seems a little weird when that's like, you know, you have to have at least 15% of your vote coming from African Americans. And, you know, Reverend Williams' numbers do actually, in fact, back him up. So I looked into this a little bit. In the primary, Andy Beshear racked up a 3,000 vote margin in House districts 41, 42, and 43. So that's Atticus Scott, Charles Booker, and Reginald Meeks. And that was about 13% of the total margin he had in overall. So if those people hadn't voted for him and in fact had voted for someone else, that could have been enough to really make this a close race. And then in the general election, the margin in those three House districts that I just mentioned was 28,025. That was about 28% of the total margin in all of Jefferson County and more than five times larger than the ultimate margin in the race.
Wow.
So, you know, African-American voters in these three districts, especially, but across the state, are a very powerful voting bloc. And I think it's kind of, you know, this is something I've been guilty of in the past, you know, writing off African-American Democrats by saying they're too liberal or they might have problems getting voters in the rest of the state. That may underestimate the power of African-American voters to actually turn out for people that they actually do support. So if Representative Booker does decide to run for United States Senate, he would not be able to run for re-election in his House district. The primary for his seat in 2018 was very crowded, but the second place finisher was a woman named Pamela Stevenson. She only finished with 377 fewer votes than Representative Booker, which is about 5% of the total. So that was a close race.
Mm-hmm.
She came close. And, you know, it would be interesting to see if she would be interested in running for it again if Representative Booker didn't run. That was something that I am a little bit worried about because, you know, if he does, you know, fail to win the primary and isn't running for his House seat, we would lose Charles Booker as an elected official in Kentucky. And that would make me sad
as
well.
Yeah, I think he's a super important Democratic House voice. And I don't worry about the seat flipping or anything like that. You know, it's a safe Democratic seat, but he would definitely be missed.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm pretty excited about the prospect of a Charles Booker. I am pretty excited about the prospect of Charles Booker as a United States Senator. I'm even more excited about the prospect of a full field of candidates running different types of campaigns. I think the primary really worked out for Democrats in 2019. And, you know, we've really never had a crowded primary for the United States Senate in the past. I kind of started paying attention in 2006, and kind of everybody that's run for Senate as a Democrat has been basically like a presumptive nominee, maybe with the one exception being when Bruce Lunsford ran against Mitch McConnell. I think that was maybe 12 years ago at this point. And that actually ended up being his closest race in recent memory. So I'm actually really interested to see what impact that a crowded primary would have on the race in the general. And, you know, you get the idea of, you know, Amy McGrath running this campaign, well-funded, being able to come out with really slick stuff, a high-quality campaigner who did really well in Lexington. You add in Matt Jones, who is this kind of, like, well-known personality who is ready to just kind of, like, tell it how it is, but may take a little bit more of a moderate tact, kind of maybe able to connect with the conservative voter a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Charles Booker, who's adamantly going after the progressive, more liberal vote in Kentucky, and maybe adding in Rocky Atkins as potentially like a more conservative Democrat into this mixture, who may be able to peel away a lot of those voters. That's a very interesting field of candidates.
You didn't even mention Mike Breuer.
And Mike Breuer, absolutely.
Which I don't know what, if Charles Booker jumps in, I don't know what that does to his support, because we've talked about this before, that he seems to have a lot of soft support, particularly from more progressive Democrats. I don't know how he'll fare in a crowded primary.
Yeah, it would be tough for him to kind of break through if that many people do run. But if a lot of these exploratory committees do end up passing, he could potentially, you know, make some noise. Jasmine, let's talk about Kentucky's first application for a charter school. So back in 2017, Kentucky approved a charter school bill. However, it was not a budget year. It was an odd-numbered year, so we didn't pass a budget, and the state did not approve a funding mechanism for those charter schools. They kind of left it for the next year, 2018. As you'll remember, Jasmine, 2018 was a pretty contentious General Assembly. That's when we first started having a lot of teachers showing up and doing a lot of protesting and striking, and that's kind of when that movement started to heat up.
2018 was the year of the sewer bill, right?
Absolutely. So one of the items the GOP majority failed to take up in 2018 was funding for charter schools. The current status of charter schools in Kentucky is that groups can actually apply to start them, but the state has no process by which they can receive funds, so they're basically just operating as private schools at this point. The charter movement in Kentucky was one of the groups who really hoped to benefit from the Republican takeover in 2015 and 2016 when Governor Bevin was elected, and then when the legislature flipped to the Republicans. They started off really strong in 2017, but their momentum has really stalled out. So until this week, no group even applied to start or convert into a charter school due to the lack of a funding process.
Yeah, I feel like that first year of the Republican supermajority, you know, one and two were right to work and charter schools. And charter schools have just kind of, we passed right to work, and then charter schools have just kind of dropped off.
Yeah, we passed charter schools too, but then you know, we weren't able to implement
the funding.
Right to work was pretty easy because you just like changed the law,
yeah,
and it's over. Yeah, and the prevailing wage and other thing among those things. But those are, there are a lot of like these big ticket items that are a little bit more thorny, like getting rid of the income tax and then replacing it with a more steep sales tax like they have in Tennessee or Texas. And those things haven't worked out because they're actually kind of difficult to legislate. A funding mechanism for charter schools definitely goes onto that list. But this week we heard about a school in Northern Kentucky which has applied to become Kentucky's first charter school. It's called River Cities Academy. So according to their website, the group who organized the school are Northern Kentucky parents who have been working since 2016 to create charter schools in Kenton and Campbell counties. So specifically, the places where they're working are Ludlow, Covington, Newport, Bellevue, Dayton, and Fort Thomas. And those are important cities because they're all the cities along the river in Kenton and Campbell County. So the mission statement of this school is, quote, to realize the full potential of young minds through experimental learning with high expectations for excellence in academics and character. It's a little long for a mission statement, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess I'm not surprised that the first application was by a group of parents, because I think this can be one of the problems with charter schools, that some like-minded parents get together and decide they're going to start their own school, but they're kind of in over their head and don't know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. all we've heard of is that an application has been filed. You know, one of the things that you would hope in the process is that, you know, if these parents look like they're in fact in over their heads, it wouldn't be approved. So the application does still need to be approved by the Kenton and Campbell County school boards. So River Cities Academy decided to go ahead with their application without a funding mechanism in place. But the executive director stated in a Courier Journal piece by Olivia Croth that, quote, if there is no funding mechanism, there will not be a River Cities Academy.
So they're just kind of waiting.
Yeah, they just wanted to get the paperwork part out of the way, I think. So Jasmine, with the election of Andy Beshear, it seems like a funding mechanism for charter schools is significantly less likely. However, the governor doesn't have much power to stop the legislature if they include a funding mechanism in their budget. He can veto, but they can override that veto with a simple majority. I foresee that the more moderate pieces of the GOP caucus in the legislature are going to have significant power over the budget. And the thing is, Jasmine, I think that group is pretty split on the issue of charters. So two people we've mentioned already on this podcast, Jason Nemes of Louisville. He's pretty pro-charters. He even calls the magnet system in JCPS a version of charter schools. I got in an argument with him about that, and I feel like I won, but, you know, he's a lawyer, so he probably beat me. Yeah. On the other hand, Travis Brenda, somebody else we've mentioned in this, he's a math teacher at Rockcastle County. He represents, you know, the area between Lexington and London, kind of like south central Kentucky, and he won his primary election against the House Majority Leader Jonathan Schell, in large part due to his opponent's support of charter schools. So this important block of voters on the moderate side of the House Republicans, they are not united on this specific issue. So it will be very interesting to see how the charter funding issue happens in 2020. So while a charter funding mechanism is definitely less likely than it was a year ago, it definitely could pass. It's impossible to tell now what the budget might contain.
Right.
Personally, one of my biggest oppositions to charter schools is the way that they fracture education funding in districts and prevent communities from planning their education systems systematically. Northern Kentucky actually already suffers from extreme fracturing of their education system. They have three county schools, several independent school districts, and across three counties, as well as multiple large private schools. Charters would probably be less disruptive in Northern Kentucky than in Fayette or Jefferson County because, you know, the system's already so fractured, but it would take a pretty bad system, in my opinion, and make it worse.
Yeah.
So that's what I feel about charter schools. There you go. Jasmine, are you ready for some quick hits?
Yes.
Okay, the Courier-Journal wrote about the large amount of social media trolls and bots who waded into Kentucky's election after Governor Bevin chose not to concede. This behavior, which is, you know, sowing mistrust in election systems, is exactly the kind of behavior explained in Volume 1 of the Mueller Report, which you should read. It's a very good thing. We talked about this at the beginning, but, I mean, this is another reason why it's such a good thing that Republicans across the state weighed in decisively saying we need to respect the outcome of elections because this could have gotten really really bad.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it still could, but it seems less likely than it could have been. Jasmine, one huge outstanding question after the election of Andy Beshear is what happens to Brady Industries? Do you agree?
Yes.
So Chris Ottz of WDRB in Louisville, he did a long interview with Craig Bouchard, who is the CEO in the face of Brady Industries. I thought this came out after the election, but it actually seems like the interview happened on election day. So it seems like he was a little agnostic. He didn't do this interview because Matt Bevin lost. And actually, the interview doesn't go into anything super new that we didn't already know, but it is another interesting look at Craig Bouchard, kind of in his own words. It's interesting. If you're interested in the story, I would definitely recommend reading that Chris Ott's piece. And then lastly, Governor-elect Beshear has named the marshals for his inauguration parade. That's another good reason to run for Governor, Jasmine. You get a parade. What do you want, a parade? That would be fun.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Who would be the marshal of the Jasmine parade?
I'd make you one of them.
Oh, that's great. I would love to be the marshal of your parade. Yeah, so Governor Beshear's marshal is the Kentucky teachers. He didn't say who, but I'm expecting it'll be lots of people who walked a lot of precincts for him during the election. He also named the co-chairs of his inauguration. That's another thing that happened. They include Lonnie Ali, Muhammad Ali's wife, Mayor Greg Fisher of Louisville, Rocky Adkins, of course, of Eastern Kentucky. Sandy Hook is the actual city. Patty Minter of Bowling Green. Very cool that she gets to do that. Joe Meyer, who is the mayor of Covington in Northern Kentucky, and Jim Gray, former mayor of Lexington. So there you go. That is the co-chairs of his inauguration and the marshal of his parade, Kentucky teachers. Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @MyOldKWAPPod and like our Facebook page as well. You can listen to our podcast on the podcast app of your choice. We also have a newsletter that comes out on Friday mornings. You can subscribe to our newsletter as well as Ford Kentucky's newsletters at fordky.com/email. And we also have a Patreon. Thank you to our new Patreon supporters that we've gotten since the election.
Thank you.
You can support us for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast. And last but not least, our podcast is part of the Demcast podcast network.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.